August 29th, 2012. It's a Watt from Pedro show.
Watt from Pedro Show. Here at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point. Brother Matt, it's been a long time.
Yeah, way long.
Maybe only second time here all summer, because the third show we did was actually on Skip
and the boat,
Jeff's
right,
boat,
yeah.
Which was bad. We did a gig on the boat.
No, I listened, man.
Couldn't do spin cycle, though. So that's what we got to work in now. Next is how to do spin cycle on the boat.
Yeah, the iPad, so I can do some kind of reasonable facsimile. Yeah.
Okay. We got to try that. See, actually, the wind wasn't as bad. We thought the big hail was going to be wind on us.
Yeah.
Oh, you might be hearing voices.
Yeah.
Because we have guests, Brother Matt.
Yeah. Dave Markey and Jordan Schwartz in the house. Welcome back.
Hijo, Santa Monica, parts northwest of here. They made the trek, and we're very, very honored. Now, we're going to get into Dave's story on this edition of the show. We started it off with Centerpiece by John Coltrane. Dave Markey's going to be our centerpiece. Jordan Schwartz, merely an appendage, but
I'm just party Phil over here.
Jordan was solo last week, man.
Yeah, you had it was all the Jordan show last week.
Dave is the news.
Oh, by the way, right away, I want to tell everyone that both Jordan and Dave have got a show coming up at soon to be formerly Bergamot Station Track 16.
Right.
Because motherfuckers, even though it's a good thing that they're putting in mass transit,
cool,
but it's in the wrong place. I guess you guys know this area because you grew up. Wasn't there even a school by then?
We grew up right around
Isn't
that.
There a school by
or
there?
Or it's Crossroads School. That's, I went to Crossroads
well, there
School.
Well, there was an elementary school.
But wasn't there actually, wasn't there mass transit there?
There used to be a train.
That's why it's called
like a red car stuff.
That was, a train station. The train, that was, I think that was all industrial.
That's why Santa Monica Boulevard is so wide.
Yeah. Right.
There's a little one and a big one.
That was, that was a red car.
This is the exposition line, right? So this is Exposition Boulevard. There was an exposition line, and it dumped in the south part of Santa Monica. So this line doesn't go anywhere near Santa Monica Boulevard.
Well, that thing was wrecked in 1960. It's been a lot of years, Jordan. But I'm saying why that property's there and why it got turned, because it got disused because motherfuckers bought buses from Detroit.
It was also a bunch of warehouses and other factory stuff. So there's
still is on that street.
Right, in Bergamot Station, there's like 10 or 15 galleries there.
Yeah.
Only Track 16 and one other one is getting eminent domain.
Right.
So
everybody
else skates.
What's his name? Right across the thing.
The Copro Gallery with Gary Pressman does the surreal stuff there. Right, and he had done the Mentors Get Up and Die video and the Mentors Funk movie. Yeah. His gallery moves on.
Oh, yeah, after Coltrane played August Diego.
Oh, and that's Saturday, September 8th.
Yeah, we still got some red car here. It's like the train to nowhere.
We have three of them.
Three blocks.
In fact, one of them is an original. Two of them are copies, but one's a real dealio.
Yeah, the train
and it goes
to
from the cruise ships down to here. Where
serves no purpose.
Where Connecticut used to be.
Yeah.
You know one righteous thing, though, about that area I've been peddling around since getting back on tour? Fucking Westway, which used to be Mike's Tank Farm, is finally being torn down.
Oh, yeah, they're putting in like a university.
We have this caustic ass
there.
Yeah, it's going to be a sound stage, right, or something?
Oh, I thought it was going to be like a maritime institute for oceanic studies or
like
something
squibs.
Like that. Yeah.
That's right. But anyway, at least they ain't a tank farm with towers.
Yeah.
Do you know about Torrance, that Standard Paints, when you would drive by there?
We
had one of them. And you see the trees. We have pine trees by there. You would not believe the growth. The way that, they're just like George Herbert units.
Wave units.
They're all like units because the caustic chemicals.
That ain't no wave you want to ride.
You want to be sporting.
So in that same zone, speaking of Bergamot, they just opened up that Crafted, the same crew with like trinkets and art craft.
We got two warehouses. That's for craft. This is an art. This is craft.
Yeah.
And they think it's a lot of people going to buy stuff. I guess only art is different than Bergamot's not crafts. It's fine art. It's paintings and stuff. It's sort of like what they try to do on 7th Street here.
Our shit's coarse art, though.
These two warehouses are just.
Oh, I saw that on the news.
Crafted.
Yeah.
And I think it's
doilies and
chicaderas.
Yeah.
Shell
macrame. Actually, what they sell at the farmer market on Friday, they got little tents there. But
I saw a thing on the news about when that opened up about a month ago. It's a big warehouse with all kinds of arts and crafts.
So now we got a battleship and a craft warehouse that is supposed to turn it into Marina del Pedro.
In a way, because they do look towards Santa Monica for certain things. For example, Promenade. To maybe replace Ports of Call.
Yeah, but Ports of Call is fucking cool, though.
I know. I don't want it. I'm not pro-Promenade. The Promenade idea is what you see at Pier and Catalina and Hermosa.
Yeah, Long Beach.
Well, we had the old mall.
We'll get all depressed.
The old mall became the new mall. The new mall became the old mall.
Let's start with Dave Martin. Where were you born and when?
I was born December 3, 1963, at St. Joe's Hospital in Burbank. In fact... Joseph is my middle name. That's what my parents gave me after the hospital I was born in. It was unbeknownst to me why I was born there. I didn't find out until a few years ago, but I was adopted, and my birth mother lived in Burbank, and that's why I came into the universe there.
But you grew up.
But I grew up on the west side primarily. The first 5 years was... in Echo Park, actually.
Oh, really?
Where my folks lived. Dad was a carpenter. Mom,
the old name for Echo Hill in the old days? Red Hills. It's a great picture of Art Pepper going up one of the hills.
Yeah, actually, Echo Park was where the first studios were. That's just where Hollywood was going to be way back. You know, Max Sennett had his stages there. A lot of those silent films were shot all around there, Echo Park. But, I mean, that's like way before my time. But
you're there, what, to the age 5?
Oh, I was there to the age 5. Moved out of there in 69. And
up to that point,
yeah.
Age 5, did the music thing come into your life? Did the movie thing come into your life yet?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there was television. I watched stuff on TV. You know, I heard music all around me. There was a band that practiced down the street. And years later, I realize that fucking Mothers of Invention used to rehearse in my neighborhood in Echo Park, and I wonder if that was the band that I remember hearing that was playing down the street back in 64, 65, just a fucking little kid tyking around there. You know, I'd like to think that was the fucking Mothers of Invention. It might have been, might not.
But anyway, whoever it was, this is how music was introduced to you.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, I heard music from a very early age. It was very much on the landscape here in SoCal. You know, blasting out of cars, blasting out of stores.
Okay, you moved to the west side. Did you start buying records?
You know, I used to buy 45s.
Yeah, what's your first one?
You know, so I think, I don't know what the first one was, but I remember having War, Cisco Kid.
Yeah.
I remember having the Turtles, Happy Together.
Yeah.
I remember having Nancy Sinatra, these boots were made for walking, 45. Lee Hazelwood.
Joe Osborne on bass.
Yeah, the B-side was The City Never Sleeps at Night. I used to spend
what was
all
the store?
Time.
Or did you get these like at a Thrifty? Because, you know, people don't know in the old days, they used to sell records like at Thrifties.
There was a record store on Pico and Bundy, and I don't even remember.
Newberry.
I think it was just called Record Store. And you'd go in there, and
they
would have the weekly top 30, you know, and you'd have the chart there, and you'd look at it, and
look at Pico Bundy's not far from Pico and Bundy.
It was right in that block. In fact, now it's like a fucking medical marijuana dispensary at this joint. It was just right down the street from Music Machine, and that's where I used to buy those singles. And you know, I mean, it was a while before I got into albums, but I mean, I used to listen 45s. to you know AM radio, you know.
Ah, so you hear that
KHJ.
Song?
Yeah, 93 KHJ. You know,
the real Don Steele.
Yeah.
You'd hear Grand Funk Railroad, We're an American Band. You'd hear, you know, whatever.
Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves.
You'd hear it all. It was just a weird
mixture
of rock.
It was crocodile rock.
You know, it was
Saturday
a weird
night's game. All right for biting.
That's when FM came in a couple years.
James Williams was convinced that Elton John ripped that off.
I saw that on his Facebook. I was reading that, you know.
He told me this on this last tour. Yeah. Like, the problem is, the song came out a year before they did Kill City. But he said he did circulate the demo around because there's a weird Stooges gig in Atlanta, Georgia, 1974. It's the Georgia Peach thing.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. That
came out on the reunion.
Yeah, that's a great fucking Elton Juan comes up on stage in a monkey suit.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, you can hear people talking about it, right?
Wow.
They didn't know who he was.
The chat in the background on that live thing is amazing. What the people are saying.
Yeah, but so James Williamson thought there was some connection because Kill City does have that link.
It does. It's a similar link to Saturday.
So, what about school? Did you get music friends?
You know, I went to, the first 7 years, I went to parochial school. I was put into Catholic school.
Oh.
And that was in West L.A. That was kind of a little bit away from where, my folks lived. And I guess Ma wanted me to have a Catholic education. And, so I did.
Was there music people there?
You know what I got there? This is what I got from St. Sebastian's on Federal in West L.A.
Yeah.
What I got from there was Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack. Like
they
used to play that as a part of religious studies. And,
I think the purple guy
Ian singing. Gillan singing, first of all, this was like a few years before I would ever hear Deep Purple. But Ian Gillan singing,
Lloyd Webber, right?
Yeah.
His deal, yes.
I was way into that soundtrack. I mean, I used to rock
it. It was coming out of a whole movie because there was hair and
right. All
these things.
Broadway, But it was it was a weird mixture of psychedelic and heavy metal and just all this culture just sort of melding. And, I just soaked it up as a kid, The man was on the moon. All the shit was going on. I was just the tyke. I didn't really assimilate much of it,
But up to junior high or grade?
By the time I got into junior high, funny enough, my dad died, I was 13, and that was kind of a really life-changing event for me as a kid.
Yeah.
And I put my foot down at that point, and I said, to my mother, look, I'm going to public school now. I'm going to be normal. Mm-hmm. So I kind of bailed on Catholic school, and went over to John Adams.
Well, did you get the punk and you wanted to be normal?
this is pre-punk.
Oh, Jordan told
this
us. You came skating down a driveway into some rainwater.
I met Jordan in 79.
Water, right?
Yeah, we're almost getting to 79. We're somewhere, right now we're in 77. This was just a couple years before I met Jordan.
Okay.
That was a trip.
I was hanging out with Lenny Kravitz.
Only child. And I went to John Adams Junior High, and my good buddy, one of the first people I met there was Lenny Kravitz.
But he's a musician, so you.
Well, he wasn't a musician at the time,
no?
But he had a huge afro, no. And I remember for Halloween.
That seems like
for Halloween, he dressed up as Gene Simmons for Halloween, and I took a picture, and that was my first published photo anywhere ever. It was in the John Adams Junior High 1977 yearbook, and it's photo of Lenny dressed as Gene Simmons on Halloween.
No, but he plays so good. It seems like he played since a young guy.
I don't think he was playing back then. Actually, no, you know what? No, he was taking music classes. He was in Mrs. Beasley's classes. So, yeah, he was studying it, actually, at the time. But it wasn't like he was playing in bands or anything.
Yeah, okay.
I hooked up with him again a few years later because at that point in time, I was in Sin 34, and
How did that happen?
Mike, the guitar player, had a sister who was dating Lenny at the time, so it was a few years later. This was like 81 versus 77, and at that point in time, he said, "Yeah, I'm getting into music. I'm going to be this." He was going to be this guy named Romeo Blue.
Oh, yeah.
That was like his character at the time. He was really into Prince. He wore these blue contact lenses, and I remember he played me his demo tape, and he had this song, this is 1981, he had this song called The Safe Sex Rap, which was kind of ahead of its time, the concept. That whole bit didn't happen for him. He eventually shucked that whole character and just became Lenny Kravitz, but, it's just a trip reflecting on being a kid and, growing up in this town, you kind of stuff happens, you know.
Not as much as Peter.
We had Peter Brady here. Pedro.
I met Debo.
Okay,
I
want to
play some music.
Okay, walk under the right tree in Pedro.
Watch your head. No, so much more. met a doctor, he wants to be a dancer. I met a mother, she wants to be alone. I met a preacher, he wants to be sinister. I met a kid, he wants to be unknown.
wagon, son of a gun. Mr. Goose, you got a groovy daughter. Yeah, yeah, got a groovy daughter. She treats you right the way she ought to, yeah. Oh, Jerry, oh, Jerry, you got me going. I got drunk and face flowing. I can feel the song put up with your tears. Well, tell me if I could, don't stop now. Yeah, yeah, don't stop now. You got me in leather, but don't forget to watch behind my ears. Mr. Ed, you got a pretty billy. I rode so hard, and his feet destroyed. And when she broke down, I cried and cried and cried. Mr. Jones, got a vicious gun. You don't know who he is. Do ya? Do ya, Mr. Jones? Mr. Cotton got a twisted knotta. Mixing crowds with you wild. Mixing crowds with you wild. The fuck can't be me. Thank you, you got a hell of a band. Jack and love taking, baby, baby, small jack. You possess the head, meth, and good time, bam.
Yeah.
Daddy, oh, daddy, I'm your prodigal, prodigal. Long hair, son, son, and bride. I just came back to look you in the eye.
Letter, I'd like you to take a look at the Naked Aggression interview, September 94, correct me if I'm wrong, the one with the Jell of the Africa. I tell you for sure, but the one I've got is missing the cover. In mid-September of 95, a friend and I took over the promo of a Naked Aggression show. We took on this financial responsibility in hopes of stirring up Joplin, Missouri's stagnant punk scene while bringing in some relatively fresh ideas and faces. So I was given the number of their manager and told to call her. This struck me as funny. A DIY punk band had a manager. Oh well, I thought. Maybe this was the way bands did shit. I was from a small town and this was the first show I'd ever put on. So I called her. I must admit, I was pretty intimidated. I was getting ready to talk to a woman who booked bands like the Queers and the Seven Seconds. The first time I called her, I got a machine. But finally, I got hooked into a humor. She seemed nuts, a little too business-like for me, but I dealt with it. She agreed to a guarantee of $200. Set the date at Wednesday, October 25th, and a door cover of $4 at the door. I proceeded to do promo. I ran off 1,700 flyers for about 50 bucks. I got the money from selling our fans tickets. I helped to make the money back, silly me. While my partner ran off 12 11 by 17 inch full color posters for about $25. We then made promo packs and each pack had 200 flyers and a poster. We put them together and sent one to Casey, Springfield, Lawrence, Fulton, Wichita, and Fayetteville. That and long distance phone calls was my total cost to about $100. The bands we booked were Brother Inferior from Tulsa, Black Label from Lawrence, and our band, Richard. We decided to hold the show at a place called the Dead Cowboy. Since we were running a tight budget, the bands were playing with Naked Aggression, they only wanted gas money. The club wanted $100, no more, no less. This brought our total cost up to $250. This was when we started to run into problems. The club the show was at was an old metalhead collective type thing, if you can imagine that. The guy who ran the place didn't have a license, and so dealt with the local pigs regularly. The last show our band had played had gotten shut down. This problem was solved with punk rock and tea. Instead of putting on the flyer $4 at the door, we put $4 mandatory donation at the door. I don't know about elsewhere, but Joplin, you can't charge people at the door unless you have a business license. Since we're Americans, we have a right to gather. So we gathered while charging mandatory donations. We only put these special flyers over to Joplin, about 500 flyers, while the rest that was sent was $4 at the door. Then problem number two arose. Black Label canceled on me because of band holidays. So I got another band, Psycho Babble. Logic also came. I didn't know where else Naked Aggression was playing in the Midwest. So again, I called Marge, the manager. I updated her on the progress of the show and asked her about her list of tour locations. She didn't say anything about the list, but seemed skeptical about the number of bands playing and about the club situation. I reassured her about everything, and she told me Naked Aggression wanted 50% of all profits in applicable. I agreed to this with a little hesitation and relayed my problems to her. She gave me Mighty's number and told me to call her. When I talked to Kirsten, she seemed pretty interested. I had sent her a promo pack for a band when I confirmed the show. She thought that was a pleasant surprise and asked me about Joplin. She was kind of worried about the cops and rednecks in the area and told me it would run in Naked Aggression had sound in their book. I told her they had a shipment problem, and then told her about the incident G.G. Allen had when he showed up here. I also thought that the crowd would be relatively larger than usual because of the amount of promo. Overall, she was very nice and seemed very excited about playing down here. When I got off the phone, I felt very excited about playing the show. The next 2 weeks went pretty smooth. We expected about 200 people on a weekday night for the show. This was good. We only needed 122 people to break even. Factoring in a sound man and Naked Aggression's cost, my total was $490. As far as I was concerned, we were doing our job remarkably well. At about 3:34 a.m. on October 18th, I received a phone call. It was Margie. She told me that Naked Aggression was canceling because one of the band members had asthma. How convenient, a week before the show. We didn't talk long. She had a lot of errands to do. So did I. I made the 30 minutes of phone calls necessary to cancel the show. Everyone was pissed. So now what? Well, in theater, there's a saying that goes well with punk rock. The show must go on. I booked Brother Inferior as the headlining band. They wanted an extra $45 in Naked Aggression as their plan. This brought my total down to $335. Since I was broke, I spread the change in plans by word of mouth around town. On the night of the show, about 70 paying people showed up. Actually, 110, but the rest were either broke or on the guest list, just to support the local scene. I lost about $90 on this little venture, but I didn't mind because it was my choice to keep the show going. But in the end, it was a great turnout for a weeknight punk show in Joplin. I had a blast. By the following Thursday, I was back on the phone trying to get in touch with Kirsten. When I called, some guy answered. He told me Kirsten was out on tour. I told him I had booked him, but the manager told me they canceled the rest of their dates. He told me that they just took a vacation for a week. I ended up leaving a message to the effect that because of their little vacation, they had lost about 30 fans, and to call me to complain for this date, she hasn't called. Now, I'm not trying to start shit up. I'm just voicing a common problem that has arisen with the business-like MTV hustling, money-loving mentality of fans. What happened to the common bond and understanding of the difficulties of putting on a show yourself? What happened to the appreciation? What happened to the battle cry, fuck corporate rock? No, wait, I got another one that's not so obvious. Fuck bureaucratic rock. This sickening display of bureaucratic ritualism is defined as a preoccupation with organizational rules and regulations to the point of thwarting the group's goals is what punk rock, so I thought, was against. Kirsten, I hope this is not your fault. I hope you had little to do with it. All I want is an explanation and an apology. It's about 2 months into the show, and I've yet to hear from you. I wasted my time and my band's resources to get you a crowd and guarantee and your manager for precious money. I wouldn't have minded dishing out the cash if you had showed up, or even called yourself, but you didn't, and I still missed out. Thanks, guys. If I'm wrong, you can call me as an apology for wasting my time. The way I see it, Naked Aggression didn't show up to play in Joplin because Margie found them a better offer somewhere else. That's why Margie didn't give me a list of other locations.
because she didn't want to face the problems if she backed out on me. She didn't want me hunting the band down. All these East and West Coast big wig punk sales can get off our asses and do something. But when we do get off our ass, we get shit on by these people. Fuck that. I live in the Midwest where the only time we get decent shows is when a band goes out of its way to play here. The rest of the time is spent with local bands, but people hear that they are in smaller cities and they roll their eyes. Fuck that. It takes a lot of balls to be the way we are in these orifices of ignorance, where every day you're getting threatened or beat up by redneck jocks or Bible thumpers. You at least have a place to hide. In Joplin, there is no place to hide. Down here, it's against the law to be ugly. Can you believe that? These goddamn cops can arrest you for being a freak. And the fans from the East and West will tell you to do something but the scene cancel on you. Most people out there have said, fuck it. Not me. I say, fuck the mainstream punk rock. I'm concentrating on the Midwest scene. Old school all the way, baby. If you want to play out here, call me. But right now, I'm not dealing with fucking managers and I'm not dealing with fucking guarantees. You fuckers are just going to have to trust me. I'm sick of our part of the world getting ignored. We exist and we fucking care. We're sick of getting pissed on by money-grubbing DIY punk fans, rockstar assholes, or out-of-town know-it-all punk rockers. Fuck that. As far as you're concerned, if you live in this part of the community, you've had this happen to you. If you want to play one of our shows, or you just want to know more about the Midwest Underground, call or write me at Dan Johnson, 528 North Pearl, Joplin, Missouri, 64801, 1-417-623-5663.
I'm gonna go skinheads, man. Let's go four times, I'm gonna go skinheads, crazy, yes! Sorry. Come on, what? This ain't a Jaco Pastorius kind of song. Let's go. Here we go, rolling? Okay.
Yeah, but who I am, though.
Who are you?
Barkmaker.
Key. Right?
Bark maker.
Yeah. The key in mind to unlock a godly treasure. I mean, a key in mind. You wouldn't believe the songs I write.
Watch from Pedro show. You just heard, well, starting off the chunk of music, some new stuff. And Mickey Mouse is a Capitalist by GFR, Real Life by Cat Power, and Breakup Songs by Deerhoof. And then we had older stuff featuring Mr. Dave Markey. Super Session with Mr. Wagstaff. Is that you singing and drums?
Yeah, well, actually, I sang and played bass on that. I wrote the music.
Who's the drummer?
Mike Kelly.
Mike Kelly did the drums.
Mike Kelly's on drums on that
it's
one.
It's mysterious. You
know, I played drums on a couple tracks.
I know. You guys have different line of
everything. Everything was just kind of a mishmash going on.
This is before Raymond had like the solid Ray Farrell, Dirk Vandenberg, Ricky Sepulveda version.
Right.
It was an album. And actually, you guys didn't do gigs yet, right?
Was no gigs. It was just the whole thing. There was some rehearsals for it. I remember rehearsing for it. There were songs written, all the songs.
Well, Raymond wrote all the lyrics, because you're singing Raymond
Ray wrote
words.
The lyrics. I wrote the music for Wagstaff and sang it. I wrote the music for Garden Party and Losers, Boozers, and Heroes, which you guys did
later.
I put
other music on, and he got pissed off for me taking some words out. See, Raymond's thing about lyrics is, well, the margin's here, and the other margin's here. You just keep going.
Right, and don't stop.
Well, yeah, why do you think you have all this space here?
You used to just have...
So you have lines that would have 45 syllables. Right. You'd be like...
He did his shot his videos the same way.
Don't cherry pick me.
You remember
the sound of the buzzsaw. Hate the sound of the buzzsaw. Don't cherry pick me.
Remember doing those videos, you know, having to read the script that just went down the wall? It was like 10 pieces of paper taped together with dialogue on it, written in a magic marker about an inch tall, and it would just go and go and go and go and go.
Movie, you could, it's prose, no, you can like pace yourself. With a song, you're trying to put this to beat and shit. This song is great. I just did four songs with him for a project called Sock Tight. Dirk Vandenberg and Jerry Trump and Steve McKay from
cool. What a lineup.
Yeah, it's a double 7-inch, and he's doing the artwork. It's like a little mini gatefold. Remember how you clean the moto with the gatefold? And then Dave with Thurston and the Tube Tops, Dear Flip Side. What's the story on this?
That's just a weird one. You know, we recorded this record with Rodney Bingenheimer called Rodney and the Tube Tops, and we had Thurston come in and play guitar on it. Eric Erlinson, who he's also from Pedro, right?
Yeah.
He came in and played guitar on it. Bill Bartel, a.k.a. Pat Fear, played the bass on it, right?
Eric had a brother, too.
Yeah.
Music guy.
I played the drums. We recorded a single.
People don't know. He kind of looks like Greg Ginn.
Yeah, I always thought that about Eric when I first saw him. I'm like, he looks like he could have been Ginn's little brother. Yeah. Same face, same hair, same demeanor almost.
I know, kind of quiet. Yeah. So you did this project.
This project, and then
some funky thing you did on his voice, beating it up, or
well, eventually
helium or what?
We recorded two songs for a single for John Sympathy Record Industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, the A-side was Rodney Bingenheimer, I Hate the 90s. The B-side was this song called Tube Tops Forever. The song Tube Tops Forever, we just took, you know, the instrumental track and had Thurston come in and read this actual real letter that was published in Flipside, you know. We usually just, you know, entertain ourselves by reading all those letters. You know, like, I'm so pissed off, I'm going to write Flipside.
I know.
Like that was so much.
Got in a huge war with TSOL.
I remember that.
It was none of the guys in TSOL, it was none of the guys in the Minutemen. It was guys writing Flipside, saying who was the bigger posers and backers. It was proxy.
Yeah.
It wasn't even proxy, because we didn't know them that well, but we were kind of friendly with them. We liked those guys.
Didn't George...
God, they got suntans, so we didn't know punk rockers were suntans.
Yeah, you only had one surfer in your...
I remember George getting into a fisticuffs with fucking Mike Ness.
But that was a different... That was a TSOL.
That was different, yeah.
That was different. That was
but still, I always equated all those
things. But we got in this war from letters, yeah.
Well, yeah, so we had Thurston come in and read this letter over the track, and towards the end of it, we just slowed... Recorded it with Dave Travis at Abbey Studio, and I just had the idea just to slow the tape down. So towards the end of it, he's just talking like he's on helium. Because the letter is just relentless rants, you know.
Yeah, it's not Thirst and Lyrics people out there.
No, it was actually a real letter that was published.
He's doing a recital.
Heartfelt.
And then there's another project with Thirst, Society Ills.
Yes.
Right. I'm involved.
You're in on that.
Yeah.
Hardcore.
I think it was at the Bangs Ladies' house.
We recorded that at Vicki Peterson's studio in Malibu, like right after that Northridge quake. You remember, like, the whole time we were recording, there'd be aftershocks, the whole place would start shaking.
It's fucking hardcore. And everybody knows that's a very famous 7 Seconds. Name of the EP and the song.
It was a start-to-finish cover of 7 Seconds, Skin, Brains, and Guts EP. Yeah.
And then after that, we had Lies, Flies, and Vermin by United Mutation, which has nothing to do with Dave. It's a band from Virginia that gave me their CD. The last tour was on. Now, back to your music. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting about Lenny Kravitz, but what about your music?
You know,
your first music thing was Sin 34?
My first music thing was Sin 34.
And how I got into the drums.
I just started, I just started playing drums.
First music thing.
How
did you get into the drums?
I went to a thrift store. Jordan and I used to go thrift store hopping all the time, and I bought a drumstick for a quarter.
Sometimes dudes got in bands before they knew how to play, Jordan.
I had no idea. I had no idea how to play drums.
You have to get your instrument first.
I listen to reactionary stuff.
It was very much like early Germs, you know, early Sin 34, because I didn't know how to play.
You did get the drums first, though.
Yeah, I had a Parcel drum kit. I didn't even have a kick pedal. I used to kick the kick drum with my foot. I had this big metal lampshade that I used as a ride cymbal. Sounded great.
I didn't have a trap set.
I had like a rack tom and a floor tom, and I would do almost tribal.
You guys are.
Let me tell the story straight. We were in Portland. We took the train up. Our friend had a 69 Dodge Charger. We're going to drive it back. Dave's in a thrift shop.
Portland, Oregon?
Yeah. Dave's in a thrift shop.
How old are you guys?
We're 16, 17. He gets one drumstick. He gets one drumstick. And I have pictures of it.
What, in Portland, Oregon?
One drumstick. And I think he stole it from the thrift shop.
As a
and the whole way home, he's sitting in the back of the Charger, beating out.
Oh, so this is where you're going to be a drummer.
Right, exactly. Then he meets Julie Sin 34, and she steals the rest of the drum kit to fill it in.
She stole that kit
for a while. He's playing with his foot. He's not using a pedal.
I didn't have a pedal. I was trying to figure out how to play drums. It was almost like the Adam Ant drummers, but I didn't really know Burundi style. You know, I was just like keeping time on the toms. No, I was sitting down. Sitting down on a milk crate, and I was kicking the kick drum with my foot because I didn't have money for a kick drum pedal. I mean, you know.
But you knew they existed.
Yeah. I mean, I eventually, within a few weeks, got one, and, you know. And I eventually got a snare, and I eventually realized that you count off the hi-hat and the snare and the kick drum. And I eventually learned independence between all three, and I taught myself how to play drums.
It just came from that ride with
stick. It came from one stick.
It came from listening to records and seeing bands. And, you know, one drummer that I watched very closely early on was your drummer, Georgie. He's really, and also Don Bowles. I watched those guys and just, you know, like very, very inventive, very creative drummers. I just studied. You know, I got to see all these guys play, you know, in their element, and I just watched and absorbed and the band was right away. We were playing shows, and there was no musicality there at all. And then within a few months, it sort of started coming together.
You're doing prac, you're playing with them.
Eventually, you know, you start playing shows. I think we're playing parties, we're playing house parties, we started getting gigs, and it was like, okay, you really had to step it up. In a very short amount of time, I sort of figured it out, you know. And it was just really by...
Julie
was a singer. Phil Newman's bass player. We had a few different guitar players before Mike joined. You know.
It was hard to keep a guitar player.
Early on, it was just Julie and Phil and me. And we couldn't really click with the guitarist. We had a bunch of different guys come in.
Mike Vallejo, Circle One.
Yeah. Yeah, but he was doing Circle One, so he didn't, you know.
You guys recorded, though.
We recorded on a 4-track, and that was released on the Charred Remains cassette compilation. Yeah. That was our first release.
Who's the guitar on there?
The guitar on there is this guy named Scott Silverman, who was a friend of Phil and or a friend of Julie's somehow. And then he didn't last long
in the band. Before you're 20 years old, right?
All the stuff is before I was, you know, it's all 17. Yeah, you know, yeah. I was a teenager, 16, 17,
18. And, we're at the end of the first hour. It's been August 29, 2012, first hour of Lot from Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour two. Special guest, Dave Markey, Jordan Schwartz.
Yeah.
August 29, 2012. It's the second hour of the Lot from Pedro Show.
Now you wanna go out now with Girl, her Legends.
What butter in the cut?
My
August 29th, 2012. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
I actually made films before I got into music.
Watt from Pedro Show. Started the second... Yeah, I've been corrected. Dave actually did movies before the music, so I'm out of order, but... I think Jordan said something about that last week when he met you in the skateboard in the water. You had already been making movies, you and your buddies around the neighborhood.
Yeah. I started when I was 11 years old.
So we're going to get into that. But let me tell you what we just heard, because we got some more Dave Markey music. Actually, though, we start out with something brand new from Mau Mau's. Remember them? They got a new album out, a song called Puberty.
Oh, yeah.
Which is coming from Rick Wilder, is trippy.
You know, Rick Wilder.
He must have had a puberty something.
Rick Wilder sent me a LinkedIn request, so.
He's out recording that. Yeah. No, touring.
I mean, it's just a trip to get to your computer, and all of a sudden you get a LinkedIn invite from Rick Wilder.
From Berlin Brat, Rick Wilder. He's a good cat.
He's amazing.
And he's still alive.
You know? Oh, I know, man. He's like.
And then we heard Joe Bouchard, former bass player of Blue Oyster Cult, with Retro Rockstar. He's got a solo album where he plays everything.
Yeah,
not
cool,
just the bass. And then, which leads us to this next song, something that you're part of, a band called Chop. Again, this was recorded up at that... same place where we did the Society Ills.
Vicky Peterson.
I'm on the land, but I ain't no sheep. Something off the first Blue Oyster Cult album. Yeah. A Blue Oyster Cult cover. And Dezzo singing, and he's on guitar.
Yeah.
I'm on the bass, you're on the drums, but isn't there another guitar?
No.
Overdubbed.
That was it. There was, I think he did.
So Dezzo overdubbed, because when you listen to it, you hear way more than one guitar. And then we heard something else you were part of for a Germs tribute album called a project called Puzzled Panthers doing Now I Hear the Laughter.
Right.
That was Mike D singing?
Mike D's on vocals, Thurston Moore's on guitar, Kira Rossler.
Kira's
on bass, and I'm on drums, and we recorded out at G-Sun Studios, you know, when the BCs were set
Atwater
up. In Atwater, yeah.
Above the plumber.
And shop. And you produced it, Watt.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I did one with Jay. I think we did What We Do Is Secret.
Yeah,
that was a great compilation.
Jay did the guitar and the drum.
Defects
that's a great
defects
compilation in that Honeyman tribute.
And then we heard Strange by Dezzo, Davey, and Billy.
Yeah, that's another
story.
That's an interesting one. That's that was just almost a live recording that we did in Dave Travis and Abby Travis' studio, and that would be Des Cadena on guitar, backing vocals, Bill Bartell once again on bass and vocals, and me on drums, and it's a Wired cover.
Yeah, it's on their first album. It's actually, the original version has a flute. I thought for sure Bill Bartell would do the flute.
Well, Bill was singing with an English accent. That's what I really like about that. I mean, he's got...
The Weasels. There was this Orange County band, and the guy sang with that accent.
Oh, Beater with a Rake?
Yeah.
I love that. Or also the Rotters, the Sit on My Face.
That guy sang with an English
accent. That guy also sang with an English accent. I mean, that was the thing about punk
he
rock.
Fake
English accents.
From here. Yeah. I think they were barber or something. The first song they'd come on stage was called Amputee. He would have his leg tucked in behind one leg and coming on crutches and like, I'm an amputee. You know, it's like, what the fuck? Okay. Desperate for yucks. And then we heard Conor Jasada. Which you're not as much part of nowadays.
No, I haven't played with
but
those guys
for
a while. But yeah, that's from the album.
You're on this, right?
And that's
and it's
that's
a big collective. It's got Steve Reed, point,
Dave Jones,
Dave Travis,
George Murillo, Raymond's Casket. That's
no
my
Tony
favorite tune. Tony's on that record. He didn't play on that particular track though.
Okay. Tony from
actually no, Tony's not on that record. Sorry.
I thought it came later.
No, he came later, but...
Tony's tough, man.
Yeah.
I like Tony. I like them all. I like that band. And then...
Chris Stein, actually.
Yeah, Chris Stein
on the other bass.
Yeah. Chris Stein was the other bassist.
There's two basses.
Yeah. At one point in time, there was three basses in that
band.
That's
right. And then Steve Reed went to drum set.
At one point in time, there was two drummers.
Yeah.
You know, the...
Always been a cello. Yeah, because Dave Travis has always been part of that, almost the sun of that solar system.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they revolve around him, but...
Yeah.
Maybe the Venus.
He gets the gigs.
Dave has
the gig-getter.
Dave has everything to do with it.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, he's the glue, for sure.
And in fact, I think I just played with him maybe 2 months ago at the Redwood.
And in the downtown, he ran the
whole
stage.
That's right. He put on the thing, the tribute to Al's Bar.
That was amazing. That was great.
No, Bloom
was and he ran Bloom the whole stage, UHF. Got to give a shout out.
And then finally, we're Chicano Batman with the Ballad of Raimundo Jaquez.
Orally.
Yeah. Aquis.
I'm Batman.
And, yeah. Chicano Batman, check him out. Now, look, this thing about movies, because people know you probably in SoCal for the music and stuff, the drums. With these projects. Also, we'll play some next hour, but there was Painted Willie also. We'll get to that. But you're known probably outside of SoCal more for your film work. So you actually got into this before the music. So instead of me asking what your first records, what was the first movies that you liked?
You know, I didn't even really see a lot of films when I was a kid because I was too young, and I really wanted to see films, but I had a hard time getting into R-rated films because back then, you know, being a kid, seeing R-rated films, it was tough. Like, I really wanted to see The Exorcist, and I couldn't see it. Mm-hmm. So I just said, fuck it, I'll make my own movie called The Exorcist. But I made a movie called The Devil's Exorcist, and I was 11 years old. And
you knew what it was about, but you never saw it.
Yeah, I never saw it.
Did you read the paperback?
It was what I imagined it to be. I didn't even read the book. You know, I was just
William Peter Blatty?
Just the culture of it, you know, just the fact that every kid, going to Catholic school especially, you know, you would hear about it, you know. Like, supposedly people in the audience were getting possessed by Satan, you know.
It's like
pre-punk rock, really.
What about movies on TV that were like Casablanca or Sleep or something like that?
I guess the one I watched every year was The Wizard of Oz, right?
Wizard of Oz.
That one, like, you know, I think that one was an early one that made me really...
No, that's intense. I used a lot of Wizard of Oz in my new opera, more than the book, the film version. They did big changes, like one huge change... is the lion, the scarecrow, and the tin man are the farmhands. It's not that in the book at all. When she wakes up, she goes, you were there, and you were there. There's none of that in the book, and that's really important. Because my take on that was Dorothy peeking in on the world of men and what they got to do to validate themselves, to tell each other they're men. In fact, there's that big showdown with, you know, the man behind the curtain man.
Right.
And he's saying, where I come from, if you're brave, you get a medal. If you're smart, you get a diploma, you know. Tin Man had a kind of lame one, you know. You got a heart, you get a clock. A clock. But you're late, you know, what the fuck is that? But he was just telling him, you kind of decide for yourself. You know, all those other shit is just these little games. And, like, Dorothy's kind of tripping on this. Yeah. That's what I took from it.
The whole thing is
more than, like, oh, you just got to run back home.
Right.
She actually had to go and see these things. See what the way the world, quote, works, unquote. So if that was an influence on you, I don't think it's a bad one at all.
Oh, yeah, no.
But other thing, too, about imagining movies, that's pretty happening, too.
Yeah, right? I made movies because I was too young to see them, and I think that's what that was my early draw to it, was just, you know, trying to create something that I would show in my neighborhood and bring all these kids together and their parents and charge them a quarter each and show them this 8mm movie.
Yeah, you know? I was going to say, and I would too old for video.
No, it was actually before Super 8, I just used my dad's 8mm camera, and he used to...
Well, so there's no sound.
There's no sound. So I did sound off of... I had a reel-to-reel cassette, reel-to-reel tape recorder.
Oh, you played at the same time?
So I would... But it was really always off-sync, and every time you play it, it would be a different thing, and... You know, but it was exciting. It was playing with the medium. It was getting people together in a room and showing them this and seeing, you know, I mean, you know, just seeing what would happen. So, I mean, from an early age, I was really clued into it.
The Catholic school probably didn't have film program.
No, but, you know, they showed us 16mm movies. I remember
they showed us.
No, there was no film classes back then. And actually, I wanted to go to public school specifically for film classes. But by the time I got in, Prop 13 had cut all those programs. Because Santa Monica High School used to have a Super 8 filmmaking class.
Wow.
And I had heard about it, and I was really excited. And I'm like, by the time I got there, you know, Howard Jarvis had it next. So I just continued to do what I did, and I just really learned
what about the other shit, like junior college or college?
Well,
it was the regional we did get one scam, the regional occupational program.
That's true. We were involved. Yeah, we were involved in an after school class, and we did this.
It was Beverly Hills.
But we had to take the bus to Beverly Hills High to do it because they had a TV studio.
I'm talking
studio
a little later the Santa Monica Junior College here.
Yeah, they
City Community College is what you call it.
It was burnt.
SMC didn't really have much.
Yeah,
didn't
have a program.
Wow. CRW was a shutout. You couldn't get.
How old were you when you took the bus to Beverly Hills?
I'm talking about
16. Yeah, and it was, they bussed us there after school from Santa Monica to Beverly Hills High. And we took two classes. I don't know if Jordan talked about this last week or not. Oh, the first class was TV production. And Beverly Hills High School, in addition to having an oil rig, had their own 1950s television studio with those huge old two cameras that that were probably recycled from a local TV station from the 50s. Yeah. So they had all that, and we produced our own weekly TV show there called Rated G. And Jordan and I sort of commandeered the show. We sort of took it over.
Yeah, I was going to say, when cable came in, didn't they have to start doing community?
Yeah, this broadcast on Beverly Hills cable television. Yeah. So, people...
They're part of their deal to get the monopoly of the shit. They had to have these things where you could get, because the Minutemen did actually a little gig in one of these community
We had bands on. We brought on
Smog Marines.
The Alcoholics. Remember the Alcoholics?
Remember the Smog Marines? They had that guy.
Tony Pony.
Tony Pony. We played with the Night Cafe. I remember those cats.
They were pretty hard.
They were West Side? I didn't know where
they were from. We found them somehow.
We weren't really even going to gigs that much.
We were really young. We were, 16. Yeah. We were in Santa Monica. We were isolated from... we eventually got brave enough to go into Hollywood and start going to shows.
There was Music Machine, there was Club 88.
Club 88 was very sporadic. Music Machine didn't happen until later.
Club 88 had a 21, I remember. Right.
But somehow we got hooked up with a few various bands. We had a...
The other class was record production.
And we were actually taught...
What do you mean?
There was two classes. The second class was record production, and our teacher was Neil Bogart of Casablanca Records. And he got busted for coke, so he decided to do
community service,
and he was going to teach high school kids. So we would meet... This was when he started this label after Casablanca called Boardwalk Records. And we would meet in his Beverly Hills office. And we would meet in his Beverly Hills office.
He got cancer really early and died.
Yeah. He died about a year later. But during that time, we were in his class, and we were students, and we were trying to convince him. I remember trying to convince him to sign the Go-Go's and Black Flag, and he was just like not having any of it. But he had signed.
No, he come from a disco world.
Joan Jett was his stab in the punk.
But he comes from Donna Summer.
Right.
Yeah. He did Kiss.
He did Kiss. He did Donna Summer.
Village People.
Huge. The guy was clearly a genius, still, it was a trip having that guy.
What did he teach you?
He got to read the trade publications every week.
What did he teach you?
He taught us how to produce a record. But
there was a recording. He took us to the record factory?
The record plant. He brought us into the record plant.
We picked a high school band, and we came in and recorded a single with them. Yeah. So we got to sit in the whole studio.
So he showed you the whole process.
And he printed out a 7-inch single, and we went to Rhino Records to try and sell it.
And this, meanwhile, during that time, we were starting to go up into Hollywood, starting to go to shows, starting to go to the Starwood,
starting to go to the Whiskey,
starting to make cassette tapes off of Rodney Bingenheimer's show. This is where I first heard the Minutemen. I first heard Red Cross. This is where I first heard Black Flag, actually it was before Punchline. I heard,
I heard
the first Minutemen song I ever heard was 9:30 May 2nd, and it was
Cracks.
It was before Cracks even came out. He had a test pressing of it, and he played it.
But that's where it was on.
And that song tripped us fucking out, man. We used to always say that, like, what does America mean to you?
Yeah.
America means everything to me. Oh, we used to say that to each other.
That is our line.
Of Merv Griffin fame.
Right.
Merv Griffin.
Right.
In the heart of Italy,
the people there.
We don't even use words. We just are like repeating what we saw on the television.
The people there are probably the least religious in the world.
But you have to realize
that's not my word.
But you have to realize that that's
what this is.
That tripped us out, though. You have to realize how much that lady
grew up in Italy.
Sophia Lorenzo.
No, if you're an Italian, I'm sorry, you're going to kind of grow up a little bit Catholic.
Sure.
So, Merv Griffin was such an idiot for saying that to her. She didn't have any choice.
Right. Well, I don't know much about that.
And she
murder.
Played it off, you know. You know,
what does America mean to you?
America. And what's she going to say? You know? Oh, you know. You know, Duce or some shit. You know. No, I mean that was a weird scene, so it made an impression on us. So we thought, whoa, they just wrote the song.
And
we'll just put some music by it.
Wow. Yeah, that was a mind blow.
And the way he would sit, too, I don't know if you remember, but Merv would like kind of sit like this.
Yeah. He was freaking.
Yeah, he wouldn't look at you like this. He wouldn't, you know, he'd be like just sauntering around in the chair. What do you think? It was like, the dude, he was really good at real estate. He had a son who lived here. I think up at Laurel Tree when those condos first got put in. I think his name was Tony. He was younger than me. Hung around with him. That dude, he came on kind of a little daft on TV, but he was actually a big Svengali of game shows. And real estate.
What is it? Wheel of Fortune, right?
So, I don't know. This is me and D. Boone, right? Coming of age, and that's where that song come from. So,
did you like that one?
No, it tripped us out, man. We got
some other weird ones on there. There's the Saccharin.
Oh, that whole
one of the best Black Flag songs ever is Clocked In.
Oh, yeah.
Best mix.
Like Spot that day I go to work.
I just, you know.
But they also let Spot do the mix by himself.
Right.
Which was pretty intense.
I was just thinking
the best recorded Black Flag, you can hear the bass.
First time I saw Black Flag.
Singing so good on that.
Dez was the singer.
And I didn't know that song. They weren't really playing that at gigs. Yeah. So when we heard it on the thing, it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I saw Keith last night at the gig for Spain.
But yeah, fucking, you know, Cracks in the Sidewalk, man. That trip was out in Santa Monica. We were tuned in.
And it was totally in a tribute to
And Chunks, too. Black Chunks. Black. When Chunks
yeah,
came out.
Yeah, Chunks.
And fucking Chunks is...
Actually, Chunks is the third one because the second one is Slivers.
Yeah.
Right.
Slivers.
Curly,
we love the Slivers. We do. We're big Slivers.
Also,
fans.
Way down with
That's
that.
That's the second one.
George. Greg Hurley.
Greg Hurley, yeah. George is... But D. Boone actually helped write a lot of those songs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in fact, there's a song on Cracks called Kindled Imagination.
Right.
Right? That's D. Boone playing the guitar.
Which one? The one that... Hey,
Cabin Indian Sea?
Dude, yeah. And that keyboard or whatever kills me in that.
Well, Appetizer. He had a marble inside of a plastic apple that plugged into a phase shifter. So it goes...
It was a shaking thing.
That's the apple sizer. But he also had the tuber, which was a big tuber. He'd go... So he's like, one hand had the apple size and the other hand the tuber, and just hollering.
Slivers.
Dude, we were tripping out on the Pedro scene. We were down.
There's a lot involved with that.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, between Kindled Imagination and Slivers, there was a middle name.
Ken.
No. Splash Tubs.
Splash Tubs.
Because Splash Tubs was Liquid L, right? Oh, right. He was like... Little tripmeister and
going around beating kids' ass.
Oh man, he would get dudes going, man. There's one guy we went to Did you go to the Public Image gig at the Olympic?
No.
Okay, just this dude broke his leg and he was in a cast. Yeah. He got, you know, splashed up and got him going so hard he cracked his fucking cast. He's doing the barn stump. We ended up calling him barn stump because the guy literally stomped his cast off and broke his leg in like five other places. Oh, didn't even know out of his mind. You know, the Olympics all cement. It's
great.
Look, we got to get on to
Brother Matt. Gotta rock on.
Yeah, change the subject. Please do everything. We're going to get on to the spin cycle.
Well, I'm enjoying the Dave Markey story because I've been digging on your projects and stuff for about 27 years or so. So it's cool to get to all the background story.
Yeah, you know, it's cool. A lot of stuff I haven't really talked about much before, you know.
Well, you ready for some spin cycle?
Let's rock it.
see it.
Brother Matt.
Yeah.
What was your inspiration, impetus?
Start off with a little summertime joy, just driving into summer because I was happy.
Yeah.
And hadn't done it for a while. And then I got a little new Chad Rock, my bud. Had some dude who goes by the name of D-Boom.
Really?
Yeah.
D-Boom. With an
yeah.
M?
Yeah, with an M. D-Boom. And then had a little touch of Spangle, because Spangle's going to be touring soon. And they are wild. Speaking of Pink Floyd, they're like the... Like taking all my Dead shows and Pink Floyd and all the drugs and then putting them now with all the newest technology and newest drugs, and you got some Spangle.
Yeah, Spangle. And some beats.
My most ambitious one that I wrote this script when I was 14 called The Ominous, and I started shooting it. And halfway through the making of that movie, I meet this fellow sitting over here to my left, Jordan Schwartz. And I go, I need someone for the role of this character, W.W. Wright. You want to take it on, and I cast Jordan in this film, and he came in and started acting.
My sister's in it too.
Jennifer and Jordan's first film roles are in this film.
How many?
And
these,
this is about
these little movies that you made.
Dude, shit.
I had about 25 or 30, but not all of them were feature length.
Yeah.
A lot of them were just short films.
They were like skits. No, he did three series of skits.
Like
and they're fucking funny.
Some of them I would some stuff I would just string it together. It was all very much, but very 1970s.
What would you call your first
inspired.
Grown up one? The Love Doll.
Well, the first grown up one would be the Slog Movie.
Oh yeah, which is kind of a documentary.
Yeah, where I was actually where I shifted and rolled. I became the documentarian, called Desperate Teenage Runaways. You know,
Kim Fowley showed up at our premiere
and put the kibosh on it. He had a suitcase with him. He goes,
look, it's the end of the second hour of the August 29th, 2012. Watt from Pedro Show, special guest Dave Markey, George Schwartz.
Yeah.
Back again with Brother Matt. Stay tight for hour three. Three.
Song was for that film.
August 29th, 2012, third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
That's all they had.
Watt from Pedro Show. Start off the third hour with Don't Say I Told You So by the James Rocket. Star Juice Fresh and Frozen by Ott. I Know Exactly What You're Thinking by C Star Sound. I For Me by Noun. And finally, Sweet 16-Bit by R. Stevie Moore and Hi-Fi Club, which I saw in the Hi-Fi Club last night at the gig. Regis, this guy's from Korsika.
Oh.
Yeah, Kors guy. I got to go there last summer.
You went there last summer, yeah.
What a bitch. And I, you know, it's mainly Italian, but it's under France, so it's this weird mixture. Just beautiful Mediterranean thing. Good chow.
Probably I would assume good food with the Italian food.
Yeah, you can see Sardinia. It's actually closer to Sardinia than it is France. I think the Genovese made some horse trade with France.
Is that where sardines comes from?
Sardinia?
Just might, the females.
Maybe the females pescadores. Pescadores. They might have fished them out, but their flags are similar. Like, the Corse flag is more with the headband, the blindfold lifted over his eyes, and the Sardini has the four of those. Mm. So they're kind of related. I don't know. I just liked it. But enough about me. Let's get back to Dave Markey, George Schwartz. Dave Markey.
Yeah.
Something about Reality 86.
Yeah,
that's after the Love Doll. Well, what
I saw. That,
we should finish up the Love Doll
okay.
thing, though. What's your summary on that? Looking back now, after all these years.
You know,
you really liked the first one because it was tight, but the second one got kind of strong.
I like the second one better actually because it's just a little bit more ambitious. I mean,
you know, so counter to you.
The first film was done for $250, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about Jam and Econo.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You show me a motion picture that was produced for that amount of money that got seen by as many people as that did. That movie has to hold some sort of record.
Well, what about the second one?
The second one...
That was the multi-million dollar one?
The second one, we actually spent about $10,000 on. Because,
really?
Because we actually screened the film. Every penny that we made... from screening the film around town, we just put back into the
selling
pot.
VHS
and selling the video and
doing
so
a gig.
So I actually had $10,000 to play with for me at the time. That's like a
a buttload.
That's like $1 million budget. I mean, and now you talk $1 million now considered low budget for a movie now.
Oh,
like,
I know.
Really
that world is
up.
So
like,
bizarre.
Yeah. Like $30 million now is low
so
budget.
So looking back on it, you like the more being more ambitious.
Well, you know, I liked it because. It was just a little bit more, you know, there was just more to it. There was more layers. There was more stuff going on. It was a little bit more inventive in a way.
And then, okay.
The first film had a great punch to it. It was kind of like getting punched out. The second film was more of a mind trip.
You know what? We should tell people if they can. Is any of this stuff on YouTube? Or?
All these films are available from. I have them all on DVD, and they're all available from my website.
Yeah, your website.
We got powerfilms.com, and if you just type
we
my.
We got powerfilms.com.
Yeah,
that's all one thing. WEGOTPOWERFILMS.COM. Go there, and Dave Markey's work. Is available there for you people. So it ain't all YouTubed up. You guys got to help support this man.
There's stuff on YouTube, too, if people want to watch.
Are they excerpts? They're not the whole deal.
Actually, I think the first film's up with the director commentary. The Slog movie's up with director commentary.
Now, director commentary, is you talking?
The first one, actually, Jordan and I did it.
Right.
So we both talked. The first one.
Stereo.
The second one is Jennifer, myself, and Jeff and Steve McDonald.
It's really good.
That's really funny. And then the Slog movie commentary, which is my favorite, which includes yourself and Keith Morris.
And me.
And Jordan. Yeah. And, those are entertaining in their own right.
David and Andy's. Out of the
Valley No, Hollywood.
Okay, you remember.
Yeah, I do remember because it was a crack up, man. I was taken back to them days with D-Boom and
well,
the fucking Strand.
One other thing about Love Doll Superstar, when Dave was editing, when he was editing the film, we had this VHS editing place called Easy TV.
Well, he had a pop involved with CBS.
Dave Travis. His dad was a news cameraman.
That's what it was. Yeah. So he had access.
He had some equipment.
Yeah.
He had some gear. Yeah, that's how we did the slip it in video.
But we did the rough inch, the rough half inch VHS edit at Dave's house first as sort of a test, as like a dry run through. And we did the Slip It In video around the same time.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, that was right around when the D-Boom thing happened, right?
Wasn't that the end of 85.
Yeah, that was Dave was editing the film.
I was just finishing the movie because I was rushing to, because I was about to go out on the road.
That space shuttle thing happened. Yeah. Just after.
I was about to go out on the road with Black Flag for 6 months, and I had to finish that thing. So I was in there day and night trying to finish the movie. And that's where I got the news about D's death. Yeah. That was really...
It was a crippler.
It was really rough.
It was a crippler. Look, we got some more music by you. Some Pipe and...
Yeah.
Anarchy Six and
Pipe, Pipe is... Pipe is playing right now.
Yeah. As a lead singer.
From
right. Hush your mouth. We're on KXLU.
Clunk. The name of this song is Clunk.
We are Clock. Pipe, also known as Colonel Cluck, also known as Mexico, also known as Hospital,
I'd like to take
formerly
this
known
time
as Sunshine.
To introduce the members of the band.
Yeah,
on lead guitar, we have Mike Glass,
a.k.a. Mike Geek.
On the bass guitar, we have Joe Cole,
a.k.a. Joe Pulacocha Man.
On the vocal mic, we have Jordan Schwartz.
A.K.A. I ain't getting into it.
And on the drums, we've got David Markey.
Also known as the Dancing Bear.
Okay. All right.
This one's going out to Satan. He's my best friend.
Status, look out up ahead, grand savages roam the land, fuck those scum for a long stand, kind of a above the space stand. Which does reason all ground. We must stack to the fatherland. Best bit of it when we get to Japan. There's a little vacation.
Yeah, for a big time.
There's a little vacation.
No time for me anytime.
There's a little vacation.
But we're not in big time.
There's a little vacation.
Let's get ready.
We'll be right back.
Texas.
Watt for Pedro show. We're having an interesting behind the scenes scene here.
Yeah.
Dave Markey music. Let's go backwards. Actually, the last song I played, I found some live Husker Du. Because the first New Alliance record was Husker Du album.
Time they came out here to hook up with you guys, we had them out hanging with us in Santa Monica.
Yeah, they came by to visit.
I remember they went and visited Spot, who was living with the Subhumans at the time. Yeah. But we actually put the album out without meeting them. It was only phone calls from Minneapolis.
Nice.
They gave the tape to Black Flag.
Do the beat.
And Black Flag couldn't put it out. So we thought it was like Blue Oyster Cult on methamphetamine. And so, we want to put this out.
That's probably what it was.
But I found another live gig. It's recorded really well. And this is a song called Private Hell. And then before that, we had... you listen to just Dave Markey. So I guess it's you as you doing something called Devil's Day Off. And
that was
Synthesizer Rock.
That was me. I recorded an entire album on a Casio in 1990 when I was living in San Francisco, and that's a track from it.
No band name, just Dave Martin.
It was just I never named it anything. So yeah.
And ahead of that was Painted Willie, which was kind of the scene talk because we were talking about opening up for people on tour.
Right.
And Willie, actually, that bass man is from.
Sin 34.
Right.
Phil and I started in the Sin 34 and went on to Pain Willie after.
But with a guitar guy, that tall
different
guy.
Guitar player. Guitar player was Vic from, remember, St. Vitus Dance Band?
Right, right.
SVDB.
Right.
Not St. Vitus. Not to be confused with St. Vitus.
Or wherever.
But,
I think he's playing gigs again.
You're going to play Bootleg Theater.
Who's singing?
Vitus is playing Bootleg Theater. Yeah, I think so. Actually, I don't know who it is. They have some other English guy, too, for a while. We get sidetracked on Vitus. That's a whole other
thing. You got to call Carducci.
Next thing you know, we'll be talking about the Mentors or something.
I already mentioned that.
Okay, ahead of that, we had Sin 34, which is Phil with Dave and their first band with many guitarists and Julie.
Yeah.
And then you got to do some gigs recently. Oh, right. For you people, Sin 34 was the name of the, I think, the first big Latin TV.
Spanish TV. Yeah. KMEX.
Yeah.
Yeah, Spanish International Network, Channel 34.
That's it.
Yeah, and they used to have the commercials that would come on. Yeah, it was UHF, you know?
Right.
UHF was the first alternative television.
Yeah, that from the MERS shit, right.
Yeah.
In fact, there was some stuff there with no commercials for the public broadcasting.
Yeah.
Ahead of that was Anarchy 6 with Third World Vacation.
Right, that was our riff on Dead Kennedy's Holiday in Cambodia. And
Who's in the band? McDonald's?
That's funny enough, it's Sin 34 with Steve McDonald singing.
Yeah,
that's
right. And Anarchy 6 is...
Anarchy 6 is myself on drums, Phil Newman on bass, Mike Glass from Sin 34 on guitar, and we did that one record, Hardcore Lives.
Yeah.
And that came out of Love Doll Superstar.
What's Phil doing? Is he around?
Phil's around, you know.
Doing music?
A bit. You know?
Oils and candles. And
he's really into making incense and knives. He makes his own knives.
Okay.
Yeah.
But for a while he was running a studio, though, right?
Spinhead was.
Yeah, Spinhead.
Spinhead was the hang back in the day.
Especially for the health regimen.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we started off with Clunk by Pipe, and that's got Joe Cole, the late Joe Cole.
Joe Cole and Jordan Schwartz on vocals.
Jordan Schwartz on vocals.
That was recorded live at Kicks.
You're the drumming. Who's the guitar?
Mike Glass.
Right.
So a lot of different band names, same stable of people, you know.
But different themes, right? Like
different themes, different years, different
same
different
stable.
Concepts.
Anarchy.
Same stable. A few people drop in, a few people drop out. You know how it goes.
Anarchy 6 came out of the Love Doll Superstar movie. That was the Love Doll's pet hardcore band.
Right. That was sort of like our Ruddles version of hardcore.
And so, but Pipe was our kind of 90s. Early, not pre-grunge thing.
Yeah, in a way. It was very Flag-inspired, too.
Yeah, very Flag.
Like everything else we did.
Well, yeah. It got the kibosh because of that.
And the irony.
Right.
The suspected irony.
Joe Cole wanted to play bass, right? He was getting into that.
Joe really wanted to, you know, do this band. It was really, actually, he was pretty responsible for, like, getting it going.
Was Hank living with him then?
That was right before.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was right before. Joe had his own pad right off of the beach.
Because, you know, he's in the Cerdrone movie.
Oh, yeah.
He tries out for the drums.
Drum
comes to the door.
Yeah.
And he's got his sticks. And I think Mike Kelly asked him, will you cut your hair? And he's like, no. It's like, fuck you. or he tells us to fuck off. Like,
Sir Drone
is the big issue is the hair, though.
Sir Drone to me is the perfect film. That's the best screenplay of any film I've ever produced.
Speaking of Sir Drone, you know there's a bootleg version of Sir Drone that I was in. I think I played.
No, there's a whole different thing with Polly Rich.
Yeah, I was in. I'm in that. Yeah, I'm in that. Yeah, and me and Brewer got me into that. And we're like Pettibone. Like, when's Pettibone going to show up?
Pettibone
was that other guy.
I know, because he didn't
Larry Wessel,
the Larry guy.
But nobody told us that the thing was cut. We did the whole thing.
I know. But he didn't like the way that dude worked. And at that time, Raymond was so passive, he just wouldn't say anything. And the dude went and did it.
Yeah, yeah. It was go. So there's the alternate, the unauthorized.
But Dave Markey's in, I think he's Allen Ginsberg in Weatherman.
That's true.
And Polly Rich Star Bates in that one. You're in it a little bit.
I also play Yoko Ono, too.
Yeah. No, but you're in there with the pose. With
No, Ginsberg, that's a signature role.
I'm Gabe Nemish. I'm like ninth year economics student.
A really natural actor.
I just said he has me freaked off. He's stupid. It's actually about Kim and Thurston Moore. Yeah, Moore. And I'm just this mouse guy. And but for when he brought Sir Drone, I'm actually kind of, it's Mike Kelly, but I'm kind of like with him.
Yeah, and you and Mike are so fucking brilliant in that movie.
But
man.
So the cousin, or Scooter, you know. What was his name?
Rich Lee.
Richie.
Yeah.
He killed himself.
Yeah.
But I thought he was very good in it, too.
He was. That movie's just magic, man.
There's this one scene where Mike Kelly, there's some bilge between, you know, Stalinist issue that we have to take care of. And I think Mike Kelly looks at him and he goes, we want to be alone. And the guy's face is just... He's just the perfect. Talk about natural actor. I think Richie was really. God, his name was Richie.
Yeah.
I keep thinking of him as Scooter. He had that band too, Alkaline or.
He had a couple bands. I forget the name.
He played bass in a band.
He had a fanzine. And he had a fanzine too.
Yeah, that was. Okay, let's get back to.
Well, I also did
86.
That. I also did that. Patty Hearst movie with Ray too.
That's right.
The Citizen Time.
I'm not in that one.
I gave Ray the title for that. He liked it.
There's also a Manson one.
And there's a Manson one with Robert.
Yeah, I'm not in it either. Those are two I'm not in.
Getting back to
Dave Markey stuff. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's all sort of cross-pollinated, man. You know, by the time we got to the late 80s, we'd, you know.
Because you've been doing some rock videos.
I started doing rock videos. I guess the first one was for Black Flag, for the Slip It In one. Did that with Travis and...
me, my sister.
Jordan and Dukowski and, you know, then I did a few, you know, I did a few other videos. Like, I did a couple for Sonic Youth and they really liked it a lot. And then that sort of led to, you know, the movie.
Shit, you did some for me.
Yeah, I did a couple. I did Down with the Bass.
Yeah, Down with the Bass and Mannequin.
And Mannequin. And
I'm the
once again,
repairman.
For a while, I would cast
Jordan.
Those
are really, really good. And I think they're pretty econo.
They were all done. They were all done for
black and whiters, and you used some drag racing footage. And
I actually shot that drag racing footage myself. Went out to went out to Palmdale. It looks like stock footage. Looks like stock footage, but it's actually stuff that I shot. Jordan and I drove out there and shot
it. They just shut it down. We don't have now SoCal. You have to go to San Diego to drag race now. They just shut her.
No more Buttonwood place out there.
Hmm? That was your concept.
Yeah,
that's what you wanted. That's what you wanted in the video is visuals. You're like, give me some drag race.
I asked for it, but I didn't know. You know, it was more of these like,
give me a dude fixing a clock, and that's where I can fix a clock.
And Jordan, of course.
Yeah,
Jordan's in a lot.
I was really big into drag racing when I was a boy. That's why I wanted to do that. The wire thing. It was alive.
We shot that live
pole, so I thought it should be like a live thing. No. I don't know why I wanted to wear the fucking dress. I think it's because my beard was so big, I thought it was going to look funny. Remember, I had a beard out to here at that time.
Okay.
And I thought that would look so ridiculous.
That's
but I don't really know. It was a spur-of-the-moment thing. I didn't think about it that much.
Well, you
much.
Know, when you think about it now, in 1993 or... When was that? I don't know.
91, 92.
92. Okay, well, the dress thing, yeah. You know, you mentioned it earlier, Cobain. Also, Kirk Kirkwood.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Also, Kirk Kirkwood wore a dress on the cover of Too High to Die, so
it was maybe that's around. What it was. What I was thinking in my head was the beard, but really what all I wanted was a good live thing because right. It was a live song. And you did really well with that. And the down with the bass, especially the editings with the music.
You want to know something? You want to know something weird about that one? The night I shot that film, December 19th, 1991,
burrito day.
In the wee hours of the morning, that's when Joe Cole was shot and killed.
My birthday. Wow.
And I remember you calling me up the next day. And you were like, you'd heard about it, and you were just, you left a message that was just like, you know, don't worry about finishing the video quickly. You know, you were like. You know, expressing your condolences. You left a really great message, and that was just so fucked up.
I don't know how to handle those situations. They're so lame.
Well, especially, you know, a sudden death. You know, yeah, like.
And it's that late December.
We're rolling up into this tour.
Right. Everything's
and
eventually.
It's actually a Sonic Youth Dinosaur Nirvana tour.
Right. Dinosaur joined for a couple dates. It wasn't like one big rolling tour with all these bands.
Well, you know what? When I saw it was mostly Nirvana, when I saw Nirvana, they were opening up
for Dino.
Yeah, in Hollywood, near Raymond Way.
That Palladium. I remember that gig.
Yeah. That's good.
Well, you know, at that point in time, Sonic's really, you know, they had the Goo album come out.
Yeah.
They had a year on the road.
Yeah.
Of their own tour. Their thing was, you know, they opened for Neil Young in stadiums. Remember that?
Isn't that a lot of that in a... Yeah, they made him go on while the people weren't even in the scene.
Right.
No, but that's gone before SB, right. I think. But I thought a lot of that is in Europe.
No, our film is that.
Yeah,
but I was just saying, the situations that led to the reality of making that film, I think at that point in time, you know, it was Thurston's concept for me to, you know, come along and shoot stuff and document this. I think he had an idea that it was going to be something special, you know. I mean,
no, they did for Evil Tour. I think Lee had a camera.
Right. They shot tons of stuff. They've been threatening putting it together for years and releasing it. But
you know about this, right?
Yeah.
I remember it was at the Roxy, and Lee told me.
I shot some stuff for that. Lee gave me his camera that night.
Yeah, because he's got a play, obviously.
And I shot some stuff that I think for that project that, of course, is still yet to see the light of day. But I think, you know, for me, one thing I had proved at that point in time is I could actually get something done. I could conceptualize it. I could do it. I could make it happen and get it out for you know, not a lot of money. And this was the next film, which was 1991, the year punk broke, which I did like I did all my other films. Shot on Super 8, one-man crew, myself. You know, I'm editing the thing myself. I'm doing it.
Obviously,
myself.
You didn't plan a lot of the shit.
Camera, well,
remember,
camera
there comes one point right. Where Thurston goes ducks. I'm going, oh, you know, he's gonna, you know, remunerate on ducks. You know, whereas a dude who can really do it good is Dave and Chris with Hold the Olives.
Yeah.
Right, they're playing with the chow. And speaking of the fucking catering tables. Yeah. Oh, the whole grave song.
Yeah.
But
all
the
that
first was so good. Intense. There's just like, he's like pondering. And he's like, ducks. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. And that comes into play because
the camera.
The bootleg shirt with the punk duck doing fuck you that Kurt bought and Thurston bought and wore. Kurt wore it on that. You know, when one of that music videos that he did, and the whole punk duck thing was just an inside joke. And actually, the whole 1991, the year punk broke, was an inside joke.
Right.
It's just something that we said as a laugh because we're sitting there the first day of the tour watching, you know, the television, and Motley Crue comes on MTV doing a cover of Anarchy in the UK.
Yeah. Right.
And we're like, okay, here it is all these years later, and here's punk rock. To arena audiences, and
Megadeth do it. Somebody did it in the '80s too.
I don't know.
At the time,
did
they do it?
Maybe later.
I mean, I'm not saying
there got to be a certain point in time where all those bands came out and did their punk record.
Oh yeah,
you know,
I mean, there was tons of poses.
Guns N' Roses doing, you know, Charles Manson.
Guns N' Roses
doing Fear. Well, I mean, Red Cross was doing Charles Manson 10 years before that. I mean. All this stuff was just building and brewing and happening on an underground level for a decade here.
These
you
guys
know?
Were just cherry picking. You know.
And then at a certain point, it just maybe
actually,
like
they were at war with that whole scene. They wanted that scene to be gone.
It just reached ahead. Oh yeah, I mean,
so they just co-op.
You remember, like,
oh, I told
remember
you.
Motley Crue coming up in the fucking scene in the '80s.
That was got the brawl with
right.
the blonde
poison.
Fucking poison. Where's the Jamie D?
Oh yeah, that's right.
And then eventually all that shit in Hollywood went from the decline of the Western civilization part one, the decline of the Western civilization part two, when all those guys grew their hair long, started you know like.
Now the best one is the vodka man in the pool.
Yeah.
From Mom.
Right.
Yeah.
That's funny. This is the first time you mentioned this because when he was on last week, he couldn't stop talking about
Decline 1.
Right.
We got Power Mag all in
plus
there.
The unpublished six issue.
Yeah.
Plus essays. Plus
after the fact,
400 photos.
Right. All the photos you found when you from he told the story about you getting the scanner.
Right.
Yeah, you got the scanner.
You know,
Christmas
it's just
vacation,
like,
we just ran through.
At that point in time in 2004 when we started doing it, we hadn't looked at these images in 20 years. You know, we had no idea what's there. And, like, it's not like we had any big plans involved in any of this. It was just simply like, okay.
No, but like Ishmael what? Says at the end of Moby Dick, you live to tell the tale.
Right.
Yeah, we survived a bit.
Okay,
exactly.
Whatever.
You know how
collection.
He did it too?
Yeah.
How does he make it? He's floating on Quequod's fucking casket. And he's carving it.
Right.
Shows to go, yeah. So I know you didn't have plans in those days, Dave, but you're here.
Right.
And you're here, you know, because a lot of the young people weren't there.
Right.
They're curious about this shit.
Yeah.
And they just nostalgic. They just want to know where some of this stuff comes from.
And we got some stories in the book. Rollins.
It's
Rice
a trip. Just,
right.
Here's the deal. Photos to me, photos, photographs are their own trip. They're not like movies. They're not telling you what to think. Or maybe they are, but a photo is a photo. And photos, to me, transcend language. I think you can get so much in an image. And no one person, like, between Jordan and myself here right now, I don't think, like, if we were in this room to take the same photo, Jordan's photo would be totally different from my photo. You know what I mean? It's very personalized. It's
even if you use the same camera.
Right. Even if you use the same camera, it's going to be framed differently. It's going to have a different fraction of a second. When you're recording an image, it's all about that 1/100th of a second that you're capturing. And photos, to me, are their own thing. And they have their own life. They have their own light. And it's just really awesome that we're able to present them in this way. And
so
the story that
in
it
the
tells.
Book, it's also celebrated with this thing coming on the 8th of September.
Yeah, Tracks
Bergamot Station.
So we got about 140-something prints of the pictures. They're scanned at high-res. We print them out on these high-res printers.
But y'all got people playing.
Is it like what you got here?
And we got,
We got the adolescents playing.
Yeah.
We got
Tony. I can get my story from
him. Yeah. No, he's good.
One of the first bands that I saw back then was the Adolescents, along with Black Flag and DOA and the Minutemen at the Santa Monica Civic.
But these bands ain't playing. It's only Adolescents.
No, I know. But I mean, Adolescents, Saccharine Trust are going to be performing.
Yeah.
The start to finish, the Pagan Icon EP.
With Holtzman on.
No, Dave, by us is Pagnicon.
Pagnicons?
Yeah, Pagnicon.
And Rob Holtzman.
Rob Holtzman from
playing
Underhands.
Drums for the first time.
I heard the
time.
Drum, he can't make the gig, right?
Double booked, whatever.
The first time in I don't know how many years. When did Holtzman leave Saccharine? 82?
Whatever.
30 years ago.
Join
30 years.
In underpants.
Yeah. And then the last, we got the fun, before Saccharine is the last.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got the last.
Got Joe,
got,
you know, Joe lives here in Pedro.
And we got White Flag and Dead Issues opening
Bill
this show.
Bartel.
Dead Issues, Palm Springs. That's Mario
Lolly.
That's Herb Lanau. That's those guys. Those guys were responsible for starting the whole fucking desert thing.
Yeah.
Everything in the desert spilled out of those guys. But Herb had this band called Dead Issue in the early 80s, and they never did anything. But now they are. They're going back and looking at those songs and playing them live, and they're fucking awesome. And those guys are great. I love those guys. Mario Lolly, anything that he does.
Dave Markey, Jordan Schwartz, I really want to thank you for coming aboard.
Yeah,
thanks for having
Matt.
Us.
Awesome.
Like Brother Matt, I totally agree with him. You're like a book. You guys are like historians.
Yeah, you know.
And it's great. Joke about
and
that.
And this is about a scene I even came out about, but you give me perspectives that make me think about the stuff.
We
in
used
good
to
life.
Joke about being punk rock historians with
it
Steve
even.
Milton.
I didn't know I was going to make it.
It even tricked me out to look at it. Right.
I
went
too hard. I didn't know I was going to make it.
Hey, Ben.
But I'm glad you guys
that
are here.
Seat almost
like,
got
Ishmael,
you,
like Ishmael, like Ishmael, live to tell the tale. I want to have you both on the show again, please.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, glad to be here.
This has been the August 29th, 2012 edition of the Watt for Pedro Show. Everybody, keep your powder dry. Yeah.